Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are back for Digital Divination. And, you know, as we're recording this, we're recording now just a couple of days before we publish this. So it's November 15th. And so we're now over a week and a half since the election, you know, and it's still amazing to me that we don't have, and we have resolution, but there's still a lot of posturing going on, I guess.
Right. There are a surprisingly high number of people who are unwilling to accept the resolution we have. And that's unprecedented, I think, in American history.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that. You know, when in 2016, apparently the Democrats were not really excited about the fact that Donald Trump was elected. But they, you know, there was still a concession speech and, you know, people accepted that it was the reality. They weren't happy with it. And this time around, it's not only are people not happy with it, they don't even want to accept it. And they're trying to find ways around it, or they're just kind of pretending it didn't happen kind of thing.
Right, right. And yeah. or ascribing some sort of terrible motive to it. Right. I mean, I think nobody likes it when your team doesn't win in anything, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. to ascribe malice rather than sort of opening your eyes and see, well, gosh, I guess there are this many million other people in this country who think differently. What do we do about that?
Right. And that's actually was, you know, in 2016, that was my thinking. And this is actually, I think what caught a lot of people off guard is like, wow, there were a lot of people that were actually excited about Trump and what he stood for, and people that weren't showing up in the polls. And, you know, this time around, the numbers still showed, you know, one way, but it got way closer at the end than right, I think a lot of folks expected. But given what happened 4 years ago, I think we should have anticipated something like that. It's still mind-boggling to me. And I guess what really concerns me is the fact that there's so much attention being paid to kind of this issue with trying to discredit the election and the, you know, not count votes and things like that, that this whole pandemic we got is just kind of running rampant and nobody's doing anything about it, you know, on a
national level. The people who want to do things about it aren't empowered to do so. And the people mm-hmm. that have the power have as their position, well, it's not our role to do anything about it. Right. So it's the worst of both worlds. The people who don't care to do anything are ensuring things don't get done. And the people who want to do something about it lack the power to get something done. Mm-hmm. And so it falls a lot of times onto the state governors, which matters to us quite a bit. It's starting today.
Right. Yeah. The governor just kind of rolled back a lot of the opening things that they'd had. And it looks like they're, you know, limiting gatherings and stopping, you know, there had been some, you know, in restaurant eating and stuff. And now they're decreasing, you know, number of people that can be in retail stores. If you can send people home and have them work remote, they want you know, so it looks like we've regressed, you know, rather than going from phase one, two to three, now looks like we're going back to phase one again.
Yeah, it's sort of a soft phase one. And I guess somebody was saying that it's kind of the most Seattle possible thing that we have a phase one, two, and three, and that's a measured progression. And we went from phase one to kind of phase 1.5. Mm-hmm. And now we're back to sort of a phase 1.25. Mm-hmm. Somebody's saying that just feels very Seattle to be, you know, finding these, you know, not quites or these middle grounds. I did note that we haven't closed non-essential businesses. So that's something that is going to mm-hmm. allow people who operate businesses to to keep working, unless you're those sorts of business like movie theaters, gyms that mm-hmm. just have to be shutting down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I think in a large part it's because a lot of those businesses have adapted to kind of being a little bit safer when it comes to social distancing and contact and things like that. And maybe that's, you know, with that recognition that we're going to be more careful. Even so, you know, it's just like, you know, every day at dinner, one of the things I do is kind of look at what the COVID numbers have been in Washington.
Well, that's a grim way to spend your dinner.
No, it's not. It's like after I'm done eating, you know. It's
okay,
like,
all right, already.
Usually the final numbers are in at 6 p.m. And so I look at them, you know, after 6 p.m. And yeah, you know, the numbers had been getting better, you know, for a while. And then like this last 2 weeks, even Washington, you know, the number of new COVID cases has been going up dramatically. And I thought, hey, we were doing pretty well here. You know, just yesterday, this is like the first time I went out and shopped at a store. I have not done that at all. And it's because I went to Costco and we got a Costco rewards coupon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to go and actually get a check to deposit it. So my wife was going to shop at Costco. I was going to run in and do that. And then I made a quick run through to look at things. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised that every single person I saw was wearing a mask.
Right. Costco is one of those stores that has been mm-hmm. very diligent about not letting you in unless you wear a mask. I shop at Costco quite often, and that comes from having a big family. And I mean, when we first announced that we were adopting twins, when we first got that news, we had more than one person tell us, what you need is a Costco membership, right? You're going to go through so many diapers and so much formula. You need to get them in bulk, which was absolutely true. But because the way Costco is set up, where they're checking your membership at the door anyway, it's kind of an mm-hmm. easy segue for them to also check to make sure people are masked. That is, they're used to turning people away if you're trying to get in without a membership, that they also are sort of easily able to turn you away if you don't have one. Your corner grocery stores don't have that necessarily.
Right. Yeah, they don't have the guard at the door. You know, Walmart has the greeters at the door, and I guess maybe I haven't been to a Walmart in a long time. I don't know if they still, if that's how they manage the masking or not. You know,
they do. They've got people separately, and I've been to a Walmart. There's a particular type of fizzy drink that I like to get that is I buy in bulk at Walmart. One of the things they've done that's really impressive is they've got somebody set outside. They've devoted their big entries to being in one way, out the other way, right? So mm-hmm. it's a continuous stream of people rather than people crossing back and forth each other. And not only are they insisting on masks, but they actually will line people up outside, spaced out, to only let a certain number of people in. That's what they were doing. They quit doing that. But now with this new requirement, they're going to start doing that again.
Yeah. And I was wondering, you know, I know Costco at the start of the pandemic got really busy and they had like lines going around the building because they were, you know, maximum people they were allowing in was whatever it was. And it's gone back down now to 25% again. So I wonder if we're going to see that. I kind of wonder if we're going to see all the hoarding that we saw, the rush buying for toilet paper and things.
My wife was just asking me that today. She's like, do we need to go buy a whole bunch more toilet paper? I'm like, we're fine for toilet paper. I mean, I didn't understand why she was asking at first. I'm like, we're fine for toilet paper. She's like, what if they kick up more of the panic buying, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I guess of all the things to be panic buying, toilet paper is really kind of a weird one, right? I understood more when things like beans were sold out, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, people are stockpiling for food in case of emergency, but I mean, toilet paper of all things.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird one, you know? And, you know, for me, I remember, you know, like going on vacation, coming home and realizing, oh man, we didn't buy any toilet paper. Everything snowed in. We don't have it. But that's like the only time I ever ran out of toilet paper and worried about it, you know? And then we have other things that we could use.
Did you ever have kids that would delight in like putting one end of the toilet paper in a toilet and flushing it and having the whole thing unspool?
No,
my kids did that. They thought that was a ton of fun. And then like, what did you do? I couldn't not laugh at it, which made disciplining for it really hard. But anyway, yeah. So fortunately they're old enough to not do that now, but
I've had cats tear apart toilet paper rolls though. So Oh, we get excited about taking it apart. But a lot of times you can cut, you know, and if I'm in a bind, I can reuse that. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess I get in theory, I've got an awful lot of really subpar role-playing material.
Oh, that saved that living world of Greyhawk stuff. Historical significance. All right. Well, you know, given kind of the situation that we're going through and everything, it really got me thinking actually about diseases in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. And in particular, you know, how much as a GM, I actually don't like dealing with disease. And as a player, I think because we don't see it all the time, it seems kind of scarier than maybe it actually is. Like, you remember in Dead Sons, when the what was that creature there? Kind of you got an affliction. It wasn't quite a disease, but basically all the babies kind of burrowed into you.
Yeah, the spores, some sort of fuzzy moss thing with its spores that yeah. burrowed in.
Yeah, and you know, and it's like, oh man, and you can't dig them out, and it's like you got to make all these saves. I mean, that to me, that seems way more scary than somebody just whacking at you a whole bunch.
Yeah, I think that's true. I had a couple of times in that campaign, that whole adventure path, where I didn't expect my character to make it all the way to the end of that adventure path anyway, and so it was a surprise to me that my envoy Kelber Hollis did in fact make it all the way through. But there were three or four times when I thought, well, this is it. My days are numbered. This is the last one. And that affliction was exactly one of those things.
Because oh yeah. And I remember
it starts going down the track. You can, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see right in the book, the way the track goes, and it does not end well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually it reminds me, I think one of the other issues you had was we were going up in that big tower there. I hope we're not giving any spoilers out here, but there was that beast that was wrapped around the tower, the plant beast.
Yep, yep.
That kind of memorized you, and it had some sort of poison. I think that was a poison deal that kind of paralyzed you and drew you in.
And then I was running down the poison track. Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah. In fact, yeah, I guess afflictions were sort of my real bane all the way through the the adventure. Not to say that Dead Sons is just, you know, rife with afflictions, but it just, those are the very memorable things. I think it's exactly for the reason you say, right? It's because mm-hmm. it's not something that people are ready for. So it's something that many times you have to sort of let it take its toll, or let it take its course, and that can be very rough.
Right. You know, so I thought I'd talk a little bit about kind of diseases and poisons and kind of how the tracks work and kind of saves and things for that. And they're pretty similar. So first, you know, we'll kind of talk about diseases. And so basically, if you have a particular disease that you are being afflicted with, typically it's going to list the kind of the type of disease here. And, you know, so is it a physical disease? Or is it a mental disease? And then it'll also talk about kind of give you some scores for it. So like what type of save you need to make.
Yeah, how you get it, whether it's something from something you eat, something you breathe, right. Something you're hurt by.
Mm-hmm. How often you have to attempt saves. And then kind of what the end state might be for this sort of thing. And so let me pull up an example here. So say we have bubonic plague. So bubonic plague is a disease, and it can be inhaled or gained by an injury. It has a save fortitude of DC 17. It's on the physical track and has a frequency of once per day. And the save is two consecutive saves. So if we're looking at the physical track, everybody starts off as being healthy. And then if you are, say, you inhale some of this disease because there were giant rats or Yosokis around that do Yosokis, are they carriers for bubonic?
No, wait, no, come on. That's a racist propaganda right
there. Well, you know, because so you think about You know, I just thought about this because so the thing with bubonic plague is like the rats were carriers, but they weren't affected by it.
Right, right.
Right. So, you know, that could, is it possible that Yosokis could be carriers for certain diseases and not be affected by it? I don't know.
I think Yosokis ask the same question about humans, frankly. Like, what kind of things are they going to spread to us that they're not affected by?
All right. So say you know, encounter some giant rat of some sort, right? And it bites you. And so this injury puts you on the bubonic plague physical track, the disease track. So first thing you got to do is make your fortitude save. And it's a straight DC 17 for bubonic plague. And if you fail, then you move down the track some. So you go from healthy to latent. And with latent, it says the victim has contracted a disease and she suffers no ill effects yet, but the disease is contagious and she can pass it on, which is scary then. At this point, you know, maybe Kelber could actually bite somebody else and they can catch it. I don't know. It's kind of hard for something like that, you know, because you'd have to, you know, think of like COVID, right? So if it was an inhaled disease, then I guess potentially you could exhale it and somebody else could inhale it, right? So maybe
in their presence, yeah.
Right, right. If you have it enough. In, you know, bubonic plague is supposed to be inhaled, but I don't really know if it works like that. In any case, so every day, once a day, you have to make a save, right? And so the next day you attempt your save, DC 17. If you fail it, then you're weakened. And so now you have the sickened and the fatigued conditions. And then the next day, if you fail it, you're impaired. And at this point, you've gone from fatigued to exhausted. And then whenever you take a standard or full action, you must make a fortitude save at the disease's DC or lose that action and become nauseated. So impaired is already getting kind of bad.
Yeah, that's the point at which adventuring becomes kind of a non-starter, right? Right. If you've got to make a fortitude save every time you try to take an action, mm-hmm. I mean, you're not even going to make it through a combat before you fail one of those saves.
Yeah, standard or full action. So basically, you can just move. Yep. And so at this point, you need to move back to someplace to get healed. If you're unlucky enough and you fail it a fourth time, right, then you're debilitated. So any strenuous action actually causes you pain. And if you take a standard action, you lose a hit point. So again, not only were you getting sick, but now you're actually taking physical injury. The next step, you become bedridden. So the fifth step, you're awake and can converse, but you can't even stand on your own. You can't take any actions or reactions. So it's kind of like that, like the fella in The Princess Bride, you know, when he had that disease. He's kind of stuck in there.
So you can still make intimidate checks.
Apparently. Right. He could still intimidate and converse, but it was really hard for him to do anything. All right. And then next, after bedridden is comatose. So you become unconscious, feverish, and can't be woken. And then finally, if you fail one last time, you're dead and your corpse is still contagious. Now, what happens, say you've gone down this track a little bit, and then you make one successful save, right? What that does is it backs you up the track a little bit. So say you were impaired and you make a successful save. Well, now you're just weakened. You're getting a little better, but you're not wholly cured.
Yeah, you still got it. You could still, right. And the very next frequency that passes, you've got to try again.
Right. And if you fail, you actually go back down the track again. So,
although you bought yourself a step, right? Because you've gone back from impaired to weakened. The next time you fail, you don't skip impaired. You go right back to impaired again.
Right, right, right. So basically you're buying yourself a day each time.
Right.
You know, if you're making a save. Now there are things you can do to improve the save. So people can take a med kit and make a medicine check to help you and give you basically a +4 on your saves. If you have a mystic that has a remove affliction, can help stop this from further deteriorating. But eventually you're going to have to either make the saves or get some other type of cure for you, kind of thing. And there we various ways to do it. Now, the reason why these are scary is that even though it's a relatively low DC, it's still, you know, if you're under, say you're under fifth level, there's still a pretty good chance of failing, you know, any given die roll for this.
Right. Well, and it's not even if you're higher than that, it's not a given in that remove affliction is one of those rare types of spells that doesn't just do what it says. It mm-hmm. requires a check. And so it is possible mm-hmm. that you've got somebody that's afflicted in your party, somebody suffering from a disease. You're like, oh God, it's okay. I'll prepare remove affliction tomorrow. Or maybe I happen to have one prepared right now because we were going into the plague rat asteroid or whatever. And I was smart enough to have to remove affliction. But remove affliction requires a check against a DC of 4 plus the saving throw of the disease. That's not guaranteed, even in kind of the mid levels. So it's possible mm-hmm. that you kind of prepared a spell and then you kind of waste it to no effect. That's mm-hmm. pretty frustrating, but kind of reflects the fact that I think in game, it's that, all right, well, I have done a lot to help mitigate this disease, but diseases being so tenacious, if I didn't get it all, it's going to come back. It's going to hit you just as hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what's kind of scary about these things, because they tend to hang on a long time. Now, a lot of our adventures in society play, they're over in a matter of hours, right? And then you get back to your ship or you get back to base or whatever, and somebody's there can help you out. When we're running an AP like we're doing, you know, like this, the last book, we went into the sun. There's no quick help any place close by.
Right, you know, right.
Maybe you got a med bay in your starship, and you know, but even then, that's going to give you bonuses for your care. It's not going to just fix it, right?
Right. And if you're playing any other kind of adventure that has you maybe deep in the vast. Mm-hmm. Or you're 5d6 days away from the packed worlds and the help. Whew, that's a long time for the disease to be able to take its course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of really brings to bear the importance of having somebody that can actually do something about diseases. You know, so yep. having a mystic on board to do something.
Well, and I guess part of the, trying to get to the diseases as they affect you is sometimes a little bit easier because it takes a day for these things to mm-hmm. really sort of ramp up in seriousness. That's enough time for a mystic maybe to kind of pivot and, okay, well now we'll prepare, you know, a bunch of remove affliction spells, knowing right. they might not be guaranteed to work.
Yeah. And I think in general, you know, when you start getting diseases, especially ones that are, you know, have higher DCs and stuff, you're also tend to be higher level. You have higher fortitude saves. Mm-hmm. You have other things that can help mitigate that. And maybe you have a mystic. I mean, on both our, this AP we're running now and the previous one, we've had mystics. Though our current AP, our mystic whiskey is a star shaman. So not going to have as much healing available that you might
right,
have.
Right. It's certainly great in the middle of a fight when it comes to blasting people's minds with tons of damage, but
right.
Kind of, you know, tends to scramble a little bit sometimes when we need some of that healing.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, and that's one of the things that, you know, in Starfinder, I think the general feel has been that you don't need a ton of, especially healing, you know, maybe if you have some stamina, you know, an envoy that can fill up with stamina, that seems to help a lot. And so maybe we're not going to see typically a lot of mystics. So, you know, I think it's probably a good balance. They don't put a ton of disease, you know, in most of the APs. Like, you've written several APs for Starfinder now.
Mm-hmm. I have, yes.
Yeah. Have you thought about, or do you think about putting more or less disease, or does it even cross your mind how much disease you're dealing with?
It doesn't, because I really don't like them. I mean, I don't, It's not that I've got all these terrible memories of poor Kelber Hollis suffering from the afflictions. If anything, that makes me want to inflict it on other players more. But it's from a rules perspective, I think that the affliction section is just kind of a big miss in Starfinder. And I say that for a couple of reasons. And let's look at the other sort of the other two sides of the spectrum. From Pathfinder First Edition, which really embraced different ability score damage and ability score drain. And so there's tons of diseases and curses and poisons stuff that affect your ability scores. Starfinder, for the most part, has kind of done away with a lot of ability score damage and drain. That's actually a really minor section of the rules. And part of the way they've done away with it is now diseases have the physical track and the mental track, but that's all. They don't do ability score damage. And that ends up making diseases really, really samey. There isn't a lot to differentiate them. I mean, if you look at bubonic plague is a great example. The only real difference between bubonic plague and filth fever and red ache is the DC. I mean, they're all on the same track. They all have the same frequency. They all take two saves to cure. I guess bubonic plague you can inhale. But when they created the track to try to standardize it, which made it, I think, a little too samey, they also didn't think through some of the things that they put on the track. As you'd mentioned, when you, in the latent stage, you've contracted the disease, you don't have any ill effects, but you can pass it on. How? I mean, can you pass on a contact disease if somebody touches you, a inhaled disease if you breathe out? It's not explained why. It's also not explained how in the dead, once you get to dead and your body, your corpse is still contagious. All right, how? Right. I don't think there's an awful lot of, you know, cannibalism going on. So we don't have to get into the point where people are, you've eaten the body and this could have been ingested. So you're in trouble. I mean, if it's inhaled poison, does your corpse somehow sprout something that people around you can inhale? That would be gruesome and not, frankly, out of the ordinary or weird when it comes to some really diseases, including some science fantasy diseases, but they just don't go into that level of detail.
And one of the other issues, you know, that comes up is, you know, typically, you know, you're wearing a sealed armor spacesuit with environmental protections on. So even if you were contagious, it seems like it should be stuck inside you.
That's right. That's right. And if you've got somebody who is also wearing their own suit. I mean, all of us have seen, here's what the spread of the coronavirus is. If you're wearing a mask, but they're not, or if they're wearing a mask, but you're not, but both of you are wearing masks, right? This is the ideal place when you're running around in space and everybody's in their wholly self-contained spacesuits.
Right.
So part of the reason that I don't lean into it, and I'll put it in here and there because I think keeping as a type of threat, it works. Like we talked about, it's something that's sort of unexpected and makes people think on their feet. I think that it's very rarely ever fatal for anybody. You have to be sort of in a pretty extreme situation to have even a high fortitude save DC become dangerously fatal. Mm-hmm. But I think that the final thing that I sort of grouse about afflictions is I think there's something... I think there's something unusual about how they placed afflictions and the tracks and everything with them back in the game mastering chapter of the book, as though to say, this is not a thing players need to think about or worry about. It is a tool for game masters. And I think that's not true when you realize that the remove affliction spell and the medicine uses for diseases, it makes sense to have players informed about, hey, once you catch this affliction, here's what it's going to do. But it's sort of hidden sort of deep back in the game master section where players rarely ever look for anything. And it's kind of in there among here's how you design a trap and here's how you build an encounter, stuff that is genuinely game master focused, but afflictions really aren't. And I actually noticed that the, afflictions and how you handle them and how you recover from them in Pathfinder Second Edition is right in the playing the game chapter. Mm-hmm. And so they're the kind of things where what that does is it communicates to the players, here is a thing not only that could happen to you, and so we're giving you rules about how you deal with it. And then in other places, the rules where you look, skill use and spell use is here's how you can deal with it more. But it also becomes something that we maybe expect or give you the tools to give to other people, right? Spells that inflict diseases or things like that. That becomes kind of a, maybe it's not a very well-used tool that players deploy against their enemies. But positioning of rules like this is really important for signifying, is this a thing players need to care about or not? And afflictions is one of those things I think players should care about, but it's tucked away in the chapter as though to say, don't worry about it. And that makes for an uneven presentation, I think.
Well, and I think a part of it, you know, and just, you know, looking through a lot of society play, for example, you don't have a lot of diseases that you're dealing with early on. And because of that, I was actually surprised that when we ran into it in Dead Sons, we were pretty low level still. I think it was like maybe book two or three.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it was the second book.
Yeah, and it's like, so I was just shocked because I had not seen that much in society play, and all of a sudden I got to worry about these burrowing bugs getting into poor Kelber, and you can't burn them out. We tried that, and what do you do? You know, we had no idea. We had no idea as players how to deal with it, you know, because I hadn't GM'd it, and none of us had really seen it before. So I think you're right, and I think maybe it was intentional on their part as, you know, the developers, when they were putting the game together at first, is like, you know what, we're not going to worry about this much, but once players are used to everything else, then we'll start tossing this out. And so maybe we're going to see a Starfinder game mastery guide that's going to have revised rules for diseases and how to use afflictions.
I would love that. And actually, one of the things I would really like to see the rules, even if they keep with the tracks, and I don't know that the tracks is the right way to do it from a rules perspective, but I think one of the things I'd like to see is really have the diseases interact with mechanics that are exclusive to Starfinder, because that could be really interesting. If you've got some sort of disease that limits the ability that you have to recover stamina, that feels like a disease that is really weakening you. You're like, oh, I can't do as much today. My stamina is not as good. Or if you've got a disease that actually, you know, hits you in the resolve points, right? I'm just not going to be, I'm good for about 10 minutes today, but that's about it, guys, because I've got this lingering disease. That tells a story of a type of disease that seems really genuine and uses Starfinder-specific mechanics. As it is now, we've got stuff that does you hit point damage, and that's kind of it. But that's sort of a carryover from when all you had was hit points. Now we've got so many more ways to picture picture your duration of interacting with the world that I think that I'd like to see a revision that plays with that more.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's not much with diseases. When we get to poisons, they're kind of laid out real similar in terms of you have tracks and saves and frequency. But then they'll have some more specific effects. So, you know, sometimes you'll have a regular track going through one of your abilities. So constitution or dexterity and things like that. And other times they have specific tracks that will skip certain things, or like will give you certain conditions, like you can end up blinded and things like that. So it's a little bit more customized, I guess, than you have with the diseases. And also with the poison track, when you take damage, it immediately goes to hit points, right?
I frankly have always thought that's an error, right? I mean, I don't think it's necessarily, or let me, it's not an error. I think it's probably unintentional. I think that these rules maybe were circulated on the times when hit points were all you had, and when they did stamina, they're like, well, you know, all right, well, this just does hit point damage because everything did hit point damage. And maybe it's sort of a happy accident that the fact that poisons do hit point damage and they bypass your stamina entirely. And there are very, very few things in the game that do that. That's actually sort of a weird, they don't go there kind of rule space, except poisons is sort of the maybe the most common things that does. I almost wonder if they thought, well, we didn't mean that to be the case with poisons, but it sure does make poison seem extreme, and maybe that's okay.
Well, it makes sense, though. You know, if you think of a disease, it kind of wears your whole body down, you know, so it's slowly wearing you all the way down. With a poison, usually it attacks some specific, you know, so the blowfish, right, attacks your nervous system. And, you know, so whatever it is, it just kind of attacks a specific system and you could be otherwise healthy, but, you know, you just keel over dead.
Oh, because you're kind of rotting from the what? I guess that's a really good way to think about it, right? Especially if you got something like a charisma poison or something, which I think is a delight, right? I really like to keyed these off, right? Where you are just you're sort of, you know, you're like I'm fine, everybody. My appearance is rotting away, and that's what's going to end up finishing me off. But I've got as much stamina as ever. Come on, guys, I'm okay.
You know, so I think poisons, we see them more frequently in games, and they seem, you know, they seem like they have more thought put into, you know, specific poisons and what they do, you know, so they've customized quite a bit of these, where you see them, and sometimes they don't have an end state of death. You just become unconscious, you know, so it's more like, you know, somebody's knocking you out type of thing rather than outright killing you. Others, you know, have other effects and things. Now, the scary thing about poisons is oftentimes you got to make multiple checks within minutes, within rounds.
Right,
you
know? Right.
And so it's like fast acting or slow acting. You know, when it becomes diseases are once a day, this is like, oh, this really is a big deal.
This matters. And it actually is an interesting, I think poison is a lot more interesting than disease from a design perspective, because poison becomes a separate track running at the same time as a combat often. What are you going to do what are you going to do for your turn in combat is a serious and pressing question when you've got several significant foes. But the fact that the other thing to deal with in combat is also this poison sort of ravaging your body becomes an additional thing to worry about, and it really amps up the tension.
But also, I think because, you know, players know this and it's more upfront, we've encountered it more, you know, carrying antitoxins, which you can use in combat. I think, you know, so a preventative or a antidote type of measure is probably more top of mind, you know, because of that. Oh, you know, we're going to the middle of the jungle and tracking this beast that's known to have a deadly poison. Maybe we should do something about that before we go in there, type of thing, you know?
Yep, exactly. And because poisons are more common, they're the kind of things that people know a little better about how to reach. Even if the specifics of, well, this is a wisdom poison and it's going to do this and then this and then this is something that they don't know. Like I say, because it's kind of buried back in the Game Master section.
They
still know it's going to go through stages. It isn't good. And this is how I can improve my fortitude save to handle it.
Right. And again, you know, most of them, you know, cures one or two saves, but we also have, again, most of the adventures I've seen when there's been a deadly creature around, oftentimes there'll be some sort of antidote or antitoxin happens to be casually available in a pack over there from some previous adventure that died or something like that.
That's because you don't want to have. There's a real problem with that because I really don't want to telegraph the dangers that are coming up. But at the same time, I don't want anybody kind of kicking themselves for feeling like they didn't pour through every possible purchase option in the rules and they didn't happen to buy antitoxin, right? The last thing is I want somebody to feel like, well, if only I'd spent more time looking over the equipment chart, maybe I wouldn't be in this place. I mean, there's only so much value that people who don't otherwise want to look thoroughly through that. And there are plenty of us who love looking through every single option on the equipment chart. But for the people that don't, you know, I don't want them to feel like there was a must have and you missed it and haha, now you're screwed.
So between the two of these, poisons are seem a little bit easier to deal with. Usually within the stat block for whatever you're doing, it actually gives you the full track and everything that you need. Whereas with diseases, it usually refers you to one of the tracks and you kind of have to dig that up. So for me, poisons are a little bit more straightforward as a player and as a GM. So I don't mind dealing with them. They don't seem as scary, even though they do damage right to your hit points. The frequency can be scary.
Right,
and usually at low levels, it's usually not a terminal poison. Oftentimes, though, so that's not bad. Imagine at higher levels, it's pretty much going to kill you if you don't do something about it, though.
Yeah, and at the very high levels, well, you know, I know I've done this when I've designed monsters and things like that. You get the higher level poisons that not only have a higher fortitude DC, but you'll skip steps on the track to get you to dead quicker. So, and it's early. It's actually more effective, I think, to skip earlier steps on the track than the later steps, because the very first time somebody gets, they get to the first step on the track, they get to the intelligence poison, they're weakened, healthy to weakened. Oh, you failed your save. You actually jump right over impaired and go to animalistic. People are like, wait, what? I'm jumping steps? Help! That's when they're foregoing their action in combat to scramble for the antitoxin in their pack. And they're calling on the mystic. They're like, I got an affliction. Please help. That really amps up the pressure, I think.
And there's two interesting things about poisons. And one of them is, it seems like oftentimes there will be new poisons that are created by whoever the author is, and they'll give it some, you know, special name and special characteristics kind of to match the environment they're in. And then the second one is, oftentimes we'll see poisons in traps, so poison traps. And because adventurers are always wearing environmental protections, oftentimes they have to call out that, oh, these are special magical spores that can, you know, penetrate your environmental protection. So, aha, it does affect you.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's trying to get past the question of, wait, should this affect me? Would this not protect? Well, I don't understand. We want to say, we kind of nod and say, yep, it'll get you.
Because otherwise, it's just really easy to say, oh, yeah, I don't care about any of those things. I'm all sealed up, you know.
Right.
So, all right. Well, anyway, so I thought, you know, it would be good to talk about these two. And, you know, we should probably think about other specific things that we want to address. So if any of the listeners have something specific in a specific mechanic they're interested in, otherwise we'll just kind of grab something that seems timely, or mostly for me, something I just GM'd and I'm really annoyed with.
or think went really well sometimes.
Sometimes
the rules are just sort of elegant in communicating something, and that's worth sort of delving into why that is too.
So, but I think that would be kind of a fun thing to do at this point, is start getting into some specific categories of rules that maybe we don't encounter all the time.
Yeah. Please ask. Please let us know. We're happy to talk about any of this.
All right. Well, with that, I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.